At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman is here, and he's taking us to Boca Chica, Texas, waiting for Starship Super Heavy to launch the fourth test. Bob, a very good evening to you. All eyes on Boca Chica. What do we know now?
What we know, John, is that the FAA, in the last second, has issued a launch license for SpaceX to do this fourth orbital test launch. It's effective as of June 4th, and thus the company will be able to do its planned June 6th launch tomorrow. The launch window starts at 7 a.m. Central Time, which has a two-hour window, and it's not, wouldn't be a surprise if they don't launch at 7 a.m. right on the dot. And their live stream, SpaceX's live stream, will begin 30 minutes early before that. This particular launch will follow the same launch flight plan as the previous, the third launch, whereby Super Heavy will take Starship, send it on its way into a orbit that will decay and bring it down over Indian Ocean intentionally, so that there's no need to fire the engines to bring it down safely. But the goal is going to be to try to see if Starship can come down safely. Same thing with Super Heavy. They're going to try to get both vehicles to come down properly and do a soft splashdown vertically in the ocean. Super Heavy in the Gulf of Mexico and Starship in India.
All right. A Japanese billionaire. This was always sort of a Looney Tune idea. I think he was a dress designer or something in apparel.
Yes.
And he's canceled his Dear Moon Starship mission. Why?
Well, we don't know. Well, let's go through the background and who he is. Yasuki Miyazawa, back in 2018, made a big splash story and a big press conference with Elon Musk about how he was going to do a Starship flight around the moon back to Earth. And he was going to do that with what he wanted to bring, about 8 to 10 artists and writers and influencers with him as part of that mission. And he called it Dear Moon. That was what he called it. And he actually did a contest where he actually picked the people to fly. About a year ago, he announced who would go on that mission. In the interim, he himself paid for a Dragon tourist mission to into orbit. I don't remember if that mission actually docked with ISS. Yes, it did. It docked with ISS. So he spent, I don't know, maybe a week at ISS and came back again, him and his number two guy. They actually got into space. But that was only a Dragon mission. And so this past weekend, he announced that he has canceled his Dear Moon Starship mission. And he said it was because of, quote, the uncertainty of the project development, saying he signed it into the contract in 2018, assuming he could fly by the end of 2023. It's not happening, of course. But it's strange to cancel it now when actual test flights are going on and there's real development going on and movement. There is some of the news stories I read suggested that it's really a financial thing. He's no longer worth quite as much as he was in 2018. And he also got his flight into space. So it's possibly those are factors behind it. Either way, he's canceled that flight. This doesn't mean that Starship Super Heavy is not going to get customers. I wouldn't even be surprised if some billionaire shows up and says, I'll pay for those artists and writers who won the seats. I'll take them on a Starship flight instead. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens, John.
Botswana and Starlink. Is this just more commercial business for Musk? Is that what this is?
Yes, but what's interesting about this story is, yes, Botswana has approved regulatory permission for Starlink to be sold in Botswana. But what's interesting about this story is back in February, the government there banned Starlink from being in Botswana and said there was a lot of problems, they didn't want it, and they were going to actually arrest people for doing so. Well, it appears there was a business summit in the United States where the president of Botswana met with one of Starlink's salesmen, essentially. And after that meeting, we have no idea what happened in that meeting, the president announced that he wants Starlink's licensing approved immediately, and they would expedite this. And I'm not going to speculate what happened, what caused the president to change his mind so suddenly. But what we now have is that Botswana will allow its citizens to buy Starlink in that nation.
Starlab. Now, my understanding is this is a complication of several nations and commercial properties. What is the mission?
Starlab is one of the four commercial private space stations under construction, and it's one of the three that has contracts with NASA to provide some development money, but it is private. However, it is a consortium of American and European companies, and it was originally a consortium of American companies led by a company called Voyager Space in partnership with Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, but Airbus, Mitsubishi, and another company, MDA Space, have signed on as well. And so in many ways, it appears that Europe is tying itself to the Starlab to make it its space station, the European space station. And what the interesting story this week is that a French startup called the Exploration Company has signed a contract with the Starlab Consortium to provide three cargo missions using its proposed reusable Nix unmanned freighter. Nix is essentially a concept similar to the unmanned cargo Dragon. That's the concept. It's going to be a capsule that can go up and down and be reused and bring cargo up and bring cargo down, and they want to sell it to the various space stations. So the Exploration Company has gotten a contract now with Starlab to provide that cargo capability. And since Starlab is being pushed as the European space station, it's not a surprise that they picked a European company, a French company, to provide the cargo services. There's going to be competition, and the need to provide cargo to these stations is going to continue. And so they will, in the end, I think, not limit access to just their own European companies. If they need cargo, they'll hire whoever they need to get it up there. But this is at least the first step, John.
Here's what I recognize, Bob, from your lessons over the years. This is a commercial space company in France. The author of The Big Space Ariana, the ESA operation. France is a very difficult country, if I understand, to do private business in because of the taxes and the regulation. And yet, here it is. France is participating. You know, it's been the one country we've not found I don't believe there's a spaceport in France.
No, there is not even any discussion of spaceports. They're not really well located for a spaceport. But then they own French Guiana, so they have their spaceport down there. I have another story that relates to the European Space Agency, which ties into this about France. The European Space Agency last year said they wanted to no longer have a commercial rocket company like Ariana Space. Instead, they want competing private companies in Europe to provide them their rocketry, their launch capability. And so the European Space Agency has now released what it calls a request for information from those various European rocket startups. And I at the moment count five, but there could be more. And they want what the ESA wants those companies to do is outline their capabilities and plans, because next year ESA is going to put out a bid for launch contracts. And it wants to know which companies are these that might be able to bid on that. And it's trying to work with them so they understand what the European Space Agency needs in its launch capabilities. And this is all part of the long-term goal to eliminate Ariana Space entirely, the commercial arm of the government rocket company, and instead go to private companies. In other words, the ESA becomes a customer. It wants to be the anchor customer for these companies, but nonetheless be a customer buying services from competing private companies. And this is popping up all over Europe, John. The French story is a good example. There are now numerous stories coming out of France of independent private companies doing things outside the government or providing for the government. And that's a change that is earth-shaking, in a sense, in France, because that's not the way France has always worked for the last few decades. And so it's a big, big change.
The only way this can be happening, Bob, is that there's private equity being invested in these companies. That's the only thing. They've got a source of capital. Do we have any idea? Is anybody boasting about being an investor in these startups?
Yeah. These companies have announced their various fundraising, you know, private investment capital announcements, and have boasted how they've raised money. What's really going on is that the European Space Agency attempted to do a government rocket with the Ariane 6, and it failed. It's overpriced. It's not really competitive. No one wants to buy it. And they've realized now that the only way they're going to get competitive rockets at a lower cost that people can use is to go the capitalism in space manner, do what NASA's been doing, transition to private enterprise. And so they've accepted that concept. They basically accepted the premises in my 2017 policy paper that you will let private companies be the provider and the government is merely a customer. And they've accepted that premise. And that's why this is happening. And that's why investment capital is arriving, because private capital wouldn't happen before when everything was controlled by the government. But now that the government's out of the business, private companies can make profits from it. So they get investment capital.
Two more countries, Peru and Slovakia, sign under Artemis Accords. That's the future about the moon. But Bob, I emphasize here, this is a piece of space history. The astronaut on Columbia from Israel, what do we know about his diary?
This is a really sad but poignant story. Ilan Roman, who flew on Columbia in 2003, he kept a diary while he was on board. And when Columbia was destroyed on its return to Earth, by some miracle, that diary survived. It fell to Earth, and in fact, it was almost undamaged. They think most of the damage that they found when the diary was picked up was because it landed in a muddy patch of ground and sat there for a while. So that diary has existed, and it's been in Israel Museum for the last 20 years, where they've been documenting the contents. But they've now transferred it to the National Library of Israel, where it will hopefully be displayed. And so I posted the story about this because they quote some of the things from it while he was in space. And it's really interesting stuff. And it's, once again, it's almost completely clear. And it's really an amazing thing. So we get an insight into a guy who flew on Columbia but did not come back to
Earth. And remind everybody why Columbia failed, Bob. Was that the reentry?
Yes, there was kind of, what happened was during launch, some foam fell off the external tank and hit the shuttle's thermal tiles, damaged some of them. So when it was coming back to Earth, it did not protect the spacecraft. So the base spacecraft broke up. Over the bottom heated up and broke up on the way down.
And what is the opinion of shuttle today because of those two failures? Was shuttle itself a bridge too far?
It wasn't a bridge too far. What NASA, once again, wasn't thinking as you should. What the shuttle was a prototype, reusable ship. And when you have a prototype, what do? You look at what works and what doesn't, and then you redesign, just like SpaceX does all the time. You don't just sit on the same thing over and over again, even though there's things that don't quite work. When the Columbia accident happened, actually, NASA went into a major research project to study the tiles and to figure out how to make them not get damaged during launch. Well, that was the kind of thing they should have done beginning in 1980. And so that's where this shuttle failed. It was a government project that really didn't focus on really developing reusability and engineering properly. The shuttle itself was not a failure. It was not used properly by the government.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Whirlpool kitchen appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your kitchen's unique needs and style. Shop Whirlpool 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.